Right, we finished numbers 9 and 10, and that, remember, we've been saying this whole time that the first 10 chapters, Israel does really well. They obey, they do what they're told, you know, constantly. God says this, Israel obeys. God says this, Israel obeys. Chapter 10 was the last thing they needed to, before they marched, were the two silver trumpets. They built those. Right? And then they leave. And as they leave, that's the second half of chapter 10. That is really the start of the next section. But they start off good. They march out exactly how they're supposed to march out. And Moses has lots of faith and is exultant. You know, it says, verse 35 and 36, then it came about when the ark set out that Moses said, "Rise up, O Lord, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." When it came to rest, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the myriad thousands of Israel." Okay, so there's this attitude of celebration, of joy, obedience. Israel is in unity with their God. Everything is good. And then we get chapter 11. Okay. So, can someone read for me just chapter 11, verses 1 through 3?
Now the people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. The people therefore cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died out. So the name of that place was called Deborah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them.
Okay, so if you look back at verse 33 of chapter 10, it says, "Thus they set out from the mount of the Lord, 3 days' journey." They travel for 3 days, and what happens? They complain. Okay? So, once they're in the wilderness again, the people begin to complain. Okay? This immediate act of rebellion sets the stage and pattern for the rest of the book, really. Or this, at least this section of the book through chapter 25. Okay? The pattern is somebody complains about something, right? It's not always all the people, right? In this case, it is. But somebody complains about something. God brings judgment. They name the place after their experience of judgment. Okay? So they complain, there's judgment, and then they name it. That's what we're going to see over and over again. Okay? It says, verse 1, "Now the people became like those who complain of adversity." That word could also be translated evil. Okay? So they complain of evil in the hearing of the Lord, right? So God, back in verse 32 of chapter 10, Moses says that God's going to do them good. Well, they're 3 days out, and Israel says, "God, you're only doing us evil." Okay? Okay? Complaining, if you remember, has been a characteristic of Israel ever since the Exodus. Okay, let's go to Exodus 15. Can someone read for me verses 22 to 24? Exodus 15, 22 to 24.
So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?"
Okay, so we see that right after the Exodus, right after God has delivered part of the Red Sea, demolished the Egyptian army, which was the superpower of the day, right? 3 days.
3 days.
And they're complaining. Okay? So you get the miracles of God, like something they had never, ever seen before, even after all the 10 plagues of Egypt. They'd never seen anything like the Red Sea. And 3 days out, they're complaining. Now, they've been at Sinai for 11 months. And during these 11 months, God has provided manna every morning. God has revealed himself on the mountain. God has descended himself on the tabernacle. Okay, so they have seen great wonders and signs of God. And 3 days out of Sinai, and they're complaining again. Okay, so we can see it only takes 3 days to forget. I just think it shows the true heart of man, the depravity of the heart of man. No, I don't. I mean, it's the 3 days, but, and so it shows you really that they have not changed, right? The generation that left Israel, even after their 11 months of hearing the law of God and his method of salvation and his way that you can now be reconciled with God, right? It is all a system, and their hearts have not been changed because they leave. And 3 days later, they're already complaining again.
And then there was glowy Moses.
Yes, exactly.
And the tabernacle. And God.
Exactly.
Everything.
Everything. Okay. And remember, we talked about the whole tabernacle and the sacrificial system. It's a model, right? And the model does not change hearts. Hearts still have to be changed. Okay. And so we can see, clearly, hearts have not been changed. Okay. Okay, so verse 1 again, it says people became like those who complain of adversity in the hearing of the Lord. It could be translated, so the people became like those murmuring evil in the ears of Yahweh. Okay, so God had promised goodness and blessing, and the people respond with rebellion and complaining. Okay. And it says, second half, verse 1, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. So God's judgment is immediate. Okay. But he is also merciful in his judgment. He doesn't consume the whole camp. Right? They're not all just burnt to cinders. Okay. It says the outskirts of the camp. This would have been more towards where the unclean were. Okay. Would have been outside the camp. So this is a mercy to them that they're not, the fire's not in the center of one of their camps, okay? It's on the outskirts of the camp. What exactly is burned and how many people and if people die is not explicit. Okay, so we are not sure. It does say the fire of the Lord burned among them. So I would assume that there were people that died, but how many, you know, and how widespread was the fire, we're not sure. Okay. Regardless, it gets Israel's attention and they quickly change their tune, right? Because verse 2, the people therefore cried out to Moses. And Moses prayed to the Lord and the fire died out. Okay. So they cry out, Moses intercedes for them, and God listens and puts the fire out. God listens to Moses. Okay. Then they name the place. So they complain, there's judgment, and then they name the place. Taberah, which means burning, or it burns. So they name the place after the judgment, what God did. Okay. Now this is just the start. Okay. Notice we are 3 verses into chapter 11. We've hardly gone started. Okay, what follows is a series of stories. This is a quote from one of my commentaries, in which every group among the Israelites rebels at God's provision and plans. So this is just the beginning. Because remember, Numbers is going to be about the death of the old generation. Why? Because they are rebellious and they will not listen to God. They will not obey. Okay, the result, right, is that this first generation... How many of this first generation enters the promised land?
None.
Two. Joshua and Caleb. Not even Moses and Aaron enter the promised land. So we are going to see that this rebellious heart goes all the way to the top. Okay? Because not even Moses and Aaron enter the land. Only Joshua and Caleb. They are the only two of the old generation, the first generation that enter. Okay. So the judgment is going to be the entire first generation dies out, including Aaron and Moses. Okay, questions, verse 1 to 3.
I just want to put Moses in the completely rebellious category. He made a bad choice with ramifications. But
right, okay, so, and that's the two. Okay, remember, too, we talked about before, in the model, you can be judged in the model and still be saved, right? You can do the model perfectly and still not be saved, right? So Moses is going to be judged in the model because he has rebellious heart at certain times. It doesn't mean his heart was totally rebellious. But we're going to even see in chapter 11 that Moses' rebellion of striking the rock instead of speaking to it, right? It's not the one time. We're going to see he has a complaining, rebellious heart here too. And that doesn't mean that his heart was 100% that way, right? God still uses him. And in chapter 12, God vindicates him, right? When Aaron and Miriam challenge him, okay? We can see that, you know, we're sinful. Man is sinful. And even Moses struggled, right? He wasn't just this perfect man. And that's why we needed someone like Moses, right? But not Moses, because Moses wasn't good enough. So we need another prophet like Moses to fulfill the model and do the actual work. Yep. Any other questions or comments? Numbers 11, 1 to 3. Can someone read for me verses 4 to 15?
And the rabble who were among them had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, and the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna." Now the manna was like coriander seed, and its appearance like that of redellium. The people would go about and gather it and grind it between two millstones and beat it in the mortar and boil it in the pot and make cakes with it, and its taste was as the taste of cakes baked with oil. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna would fall with it. Now Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. So Moses said to the Lord, "Why hast thou been so hard on thy servant? And why hast thou not found favor in thy sight, that thou hast laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who convinced all this people? Was it I who brought them forth, that thou shouldest say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom, and nurse, carry the nursing infant to the land which thou didst swear to their fathers'? Where am I to get meat to give all this people? And they weep before me, saying, 'Give us meat that we may eat.'" 14 or 15?
15.
"Okay. I alone am not able to carry all this people, because it is too burdensome for me. So if thou art going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once, if I have found favor in thy sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness."
Low point for Moses.
Sorry.
Okay.
Dharma King.
Yeah. All right, so this story is very similar to Exodus 16 when they're complaining about no food and God provides them manna, okay? So Exodus 16, they complain because they have no food. Now they are complaining not because they have no food, because they still have manna, but they're sick and tired of manna, all right? So now they're complaining for lack of variety. Food and water are going to be common complaints, okay, which, from a human perspective, makes sense, right? Because you need food and water to survive, okay? But it shows that they don't trust God for their basic needs. Even after all God does, they do not believe that God is not going to just let them starve and dehydrate in the wilderness, okay? What's interesting is Exodus 16, God gives them food, manna, as a blessing, right? Here, when he gives them meat as quail, it's going to end up being a judgment as well. He gives them what they want, but, you know, they always say, be careful what you ask for, right? Be careful what you ask for, Israel, because the quail's going to end up being a judgment. You're going to get what you want, and then you're not going to want it anymore. So this rebellion starts with the rabble, beginning of verse 4. Okay, the rabble, these were the foreigners who joined the Israelites in the Exodus. If you remember, when they leave Egypt, it says they leave with a mixed multitude. Okay, so these are part of the mixed multitude. And this is a reversal. Israel was to be an influence and example to the nations. That was going to be their job. Instead, here we have the nations influencing Israel in all the wrong ways, and Israel just rolls over, right? And just goes right along. They don't fight it. They don't say, no, that's not right. Our God will provide. None of that. Okay, they join, because it says the rabble, right, had greedy desires, and also the sons of Israel, right? So, I mean, it's like the rabble may have started it, but the Israelites joined in right away. There was no pushback. Okay. It said they had greedy desires. The rabble has greedy desires. Literally, this is, they were craving a craving, is the literal translation here. Okay, so it is a very strong desire. They are sick and tired of manna, and they just want more. Okay. All Israel quickly joins in, and what is the problem? They don't have meat, and they have nostalgia of what they got in Egypt, right? Fish and cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic, right? All good foods, all good gifts of God, okay? They're also all foods that require a lot of water, okay? That doesn't exist in the wilderness, you know? So those are the things that they're missing the most, are the foods that required the water that Egypt had. Egypt had lots of water. And so we're able to have all those foods, and they cannot have those foods in the wilderness. Okay, so just like nostalgia mostly is, or the good old days mostly is, you remember only the good things, while conveniently, we joke that my parents have forgotten all the bad things from our childhood, and they just can only remember the good things. Okay, sometimes that's good, but here, it's a very bad thing, right? Because they are forgetting the bondage and the oppression and the slavery that God delivered them from. And all they are focusing on is, you know, yeah, maybe they had some good food to eat, but is the good food really worth the slavery and bondage to Pharaoh? Okay. So just like before, and if you remember this, when they were complaining in the wilderness right after the Exodus, we talked about in Exodus that they were basically saying, God, we would rather be slaves of Pharaoh than slaves of you, right? So we talked about it was basically national apostasy, because they were saying, God, it is better for us to be slaves back in Egypt than it is to be out here wandering in the wilderness with you as our God. Okay? So here they're basically saying the same thing. We want to go back to Egypt, back under oppression, back into slavery, so that we can have some fish and cucumbers, then be here marching on the way to the promised land. That's where they're going. They have left Sinai. They are on their way to conquer the promised land that God had promised that he would give them, right? And they're saying we would rather be slaves in Egypt and have some cucumbers than eat manna here in the wilderness with you as our God. Okay, they say our appetite is gone. Literally translated, that's our souls are dried up, or our bodies are dried up. Basically, we're shriveling away, okay, because all we have to eat is manna. And it says there's nothing at all to look at except this manna, okay? So basically, all they can see and all they think about is that all they have to eat is manna, and they're sick of it. No, not literally. No. Okay. Now, granted, they have been eating manna now for more than a year. Exodus 16, verse 1 says it is in the second month that God sends manna. Okay. Now, remember, they left the 20th day of the second month. So it has been a year now, a little over a year, that they have been eating manna every day. Okay. And you can understand, from their perspective at least, that it doesn't matter how good something is, when you eat it all day, every day for a year, it's going to get sick, old. It's going to get old. However, on the flip side, right, they're in a desert. If God doesn't provide food, they starve to death, okay? So, yes, maybe you get sick of it, but it is still sustenance and it is keeping you alive, okay? So they are sick, they are dissatisfied and discontent with what God has provided them. Okay, so God has provided for their needs, just not in exactly the way they want it. And so then they are complaining, not because God hasn't met their needs, but because God hasn't done exactly what they want him to do.
Do they know when they're supposed to get to the promised land?
I don't know if they know. They get to the promised land in chapter 13. So they're not that far away. I mean, I'm not sure how long it takes because it doesn't specifically say. But they're at Sinai, which is at the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, and Israel is just up the peninsula.
And they so have a rough idea geographically where Israel
they should have had a right.
They have a rough idea that it's not like we're going to California and we're walking from Wisconsin. You know,
right.
We're just
going
to go to Illinois. Or
right. It's not super far. Now, granted, they're a big mass of people, so it's going to take them a while, but they're not going to be for years getting there. They should know that we are on the way there, you know, and then if we conquer the promised land, there will be other variety of food to eat and stuff like
that. It's going to just take a little bit longer.
Right.
Know, give me 2 weeks or
right.
Whatever, you know.
Right. But they couldn't, they didn't even, that didn't even matter. They were going to complain. And then the funny thing is, because they get to the promised land and they reject the promised land, right? What's their punishment?
Manna
for 40 years. Exactly. Whereas they could have had manna, exactly, for maybe just a couple more months and be done. So, but instead, they rebel, and so now they get manna for 40 years instead of for just maybe a year and a half, right? Now they get it for 40. So, yes. Good point.
We'll be satisfied with this, but we're praying for
right.
More.
We could ask for more.
God may have just blessed them.
Like yeah.
Being content, but
right, right.
Bless them because they were content with what
exactly, exactly. They could have asked for meat in a way that was not complaining, and then been content if God says yes or no, right? But instead, they are. They complain, right? All this, they wept. I mean, like, this is not just, oh, I wish I had some meat, right? I mean, this is, if you look, verse 10, right? Each man at the door, now Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the door of his tent, right? So, I mean, this is all of Israel, and this is a big deal. That's all they can think about. That's all they're consumed with is meat, 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 meat. We want meat to eat, okay? Scorpions would have been unclean, yes.
Snakes were unclean.
Yes, they could have had locusts. Those were clean.
Or they could have just taken a sacrifice.
They could have made a peace offering.
Yeah.
They could have made a peace offering because that would have been meat. But they wanted, I think the thing is, they wanted lots of meat. Like when you did a peace offering, you had meat for one meal and then you were done. Yeah. But, yep. Right. That's funny.
So
yeah.
I never thought of it before, but like the grain offering and the drink offering, how did they make wine? And where did they get the grain from? They didn't have any crops.
They would have brought it from Egypt, I think. We're only a year out from Egypt. Okay, so, and remember when they left, they, and also they plundered the Egyptians, basically, so they probably could have traded for stuff as well.
Oh, so maybe you think they got grain from
right.
traders.
Right, because they had money and whatever.
So they didn't, in theory then, if this is true, they didn't just
right.
get 100%
of right, time. Right. Right. Manna maybe was the base of what
sure.
they ate,
right.
and then they would have added some other stuff on top of that, whatever they could trade for. Yeah. Yeah.
At least they didn't have to fix it. They just walked out and picked it up. That
well, they did fix it. That's what the 7 to 9 says. They would grind it, gather it, grind it, beat it,
yeah.
boil it.
Becky, when it just pops up.
Put it on a plate.
And then wash that bucket that you
Okay, so verse 7 to 9, God reminds us what the manna was. Okay? So this was a gracious gift from God that they now despised. Okay, it probably tastes, it says the manna was like coriander seed, so it might have tasted a little bit like coriander. Its appearance like that of bdellium. Bdellium is a pale yellow or white resin. Okay. Exodus 16, verse 14 says it was flaky white. And Exodus 16, verse 31 says it tasted like honey. Okay, so it was a little sweet. And here it says, taste of cakes baked with oil. Okay. Exodus 16, 14, and 16, 31. Is that
14,
yeah. 14. Verse 14. Yep. Okay. So they would make it into cakes, and it tasted like rich, creamy olive oil, maybe a little sweet. I had a pastor that said it tasted like donuts, which I don't think that's probably true. But the emphasis is it tasted good. Now, granted, you eat anything for a year. Doesn't matter how good it tastes, you are going to get a little sick of it. But the point here too is it's the heart attitude. Are you thankful for what God has provided for you, even if it's maybe not what you would have chosen, right? Or do you just have a complaining heart that this isn't exactly what I want, and so I'm going to throw a fit? Okay. The rabble. Well, it's actually all of Israel, but yes, the. Believers. Right.
And maybe they incited the masses.
Well, and I think that's, they started it, but the thing is, Israel picked it up really quick. Whereas Israel should have said, no, our God has been faithful to provide food for us. We should be grateful. Right? Instead of doing that, they say, hey, you're right. We haven't had meat, you know, and then they join right in. Okay, verse 9, when the dew fell in the camp at night, the manna would fall with it. Okay, so this is emphasis on God's faithfulness. The manna came regularly as the dew. You know, so God provided day in and day out. They had food to eat, and Israel's complaining. Okay, so Israel's complaining, and now we get to see Moses' response. Right? So Moses, it says, now Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent. So this is everyone. It's widespread. Now, this doesn't mean that it's every single person, okay? But it is widespread throughout Israel. I would say the vast majority. That doesn't mean there weren't those among Israel that still honored God and were content, okay? Moses and God both hear the complaining. It says, the anger of the Lord was greatly kindled, and Moses was displeased. That displeased is literally that in the eyes of Moses, it was evil and contemptible. Okay, so Moses recognizes that what the people are doing is wrong. Okay, so how does he respond? Oh, good old Moses. He does exactly what the people do. He's just not complaining for meat. He's complaining for other reasons. He followed the leader. So the people are complaining. Now even Moses complains. Okay, so this is the start. This is a contributing factor to why he does not enter the land. Okay, Moses is unfortunately part of the problem and not part of the solution. Okay, which, stepping back, you can be sympathetic with Moses. Right? I mean, you have an entire nation of 2.5 million people, and they're all crying for meat, and you are the leader, and they're coming to you, and they're expecting you to get them meat. I mean, that's a heavy burden to bear. Okay, so from a human perspective, it's understandable what Moses does. That doesn't make it right. Okay? So, Moses is upset because his role as leader is now unbearable. Okay? And who does he blame? God, right? And if you look at the pronouns, it's obvious. Verse 11, so Moses said to the Lord, why have you been so hard on your servant, right? And why have I not found favor in your sight? You have laid the burden of all this people on me. Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse, carry as a nursing infant to the land which you swore to your forefathers? Where am I to get meat to give all this people? Okay, so he is blamed. God, why did you choose me? Now remember, did Moses want to be chosen in the first place? Oh no. He fought God tooth and nail. Right? God, I can't speak. Moses, you're a very good speaker. Right, so he tried every excuse he could to get out of it. Now he's in it, and now it's become so unbearable that he doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
He also takes upon himself responsibilities that are not his.
Exactly. It is not his responsibility to provide meat for all the people.
Right.
It wasn't his responsibility to provide manna for all the people. He didn't have anything to do with that.
He's not able to carry all these people. Well, it's too burdensome.
No one's asking.
You're not doing it anyway. Moses, so you're not getting this. Let's work on your perception.
Oh, but it feels that way when he is the human that they all come complaining to. Yeah. So we see discontentment, despair, and even rebellion in what Moses says. Okay? Just like the people, Moses has lost sight of God's greatness, grace, and ability to provide.
What was the first thing?
See God's greatness. Grace and ability to provide, right? God has proved himself faithful for the last probably 2 years because they did the 10 plagues, right? And then God parts the Red Sea and drowns the entire Egyptian army. Then he provides for them on their march to Sinai. He's provided for them the entire time they're at Sinai. He has provided a way that man can be reconciled with God and that God can actually live among them, right? I mean, he has done all that, and now Moses is like, that's it. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back is meat, okay?
Pretty much Moses' whole life, really.
Right, right.
When he was a little baby.
That's right, because God spares him from the time he was an infant, right, to grow up in Pharaoh's palace. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So Moses is blaming God. When I read this, it reminded me of Adam, right? God says, Adam, where are you? What did you do? And what does Adam say?
It was a woman.
Right, but who does he blame really? You gave me this woman, God. What were you thinking? It's your fault. That's basically what Adam says, right? Moses is basically saying something very similar. God, these people, you gave them to me. You put me as leader. Okay?
But that is typically what goes on.
Yes. Yes.
Nobody
takes responsibility. That's right.
What they did. It's all about what other people did.
Right.
And that's why I'm like I am. Because my mom did.
Oh, right, right.
I'm this way because
of somebody else.
Responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in reading this, it really made me think that, you know, sometimes the evil of the world is so great or things are so overwhelming that we lose sight of how great God is and all that he has already accomplished. And we think, how in the world can we get out of this mess? You know, how can God work good out of this? How can anything, you know, good happen or whatever? We can despair.
I think your statement was so insightful. I feel like that's when I'm sinning, a lot of it would be that. I lose sight of God's greatness or I lose sight of his grace. Or I lose sight of his ability to provide, and I'm fear, you know, I'm
right.
Fearful, or I'm this, or I'm that, or I'm this, because I'm just not.
Right, because we get caught up in our circumstances, in the evil happening around us, or the hardness, or whatever, and that's exactly what happened to Moses, right? He's caught up in the complaining, and He's stressed and he doesn't know what he's supposed to do. And so then he turns around and blames God instead of stopping and thinking, what has God done in the past? Right? And this reminded me, let's go to 1 Corinthians. Because sometimes we're like, oh my goodness, how in the world could Israel act this way? Right? They're 3 days out. How in the world can they rebel? Well, this is one of the reasons. 1 Corinthians 10. And I'll read it. It's verse 1 to 11. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers, okay, he's talking about Israel, were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And we're all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now these things happened as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written. The people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. That is the red calf incident, the golden calf incident, I believe. Yes. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents. We'll get to that story later. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Okay, so Israel struggles in the wilderness and they complain and they act immorally and they do all these things, right? Why is it written down? Why do we need to know this? So that we don't make the same mistakes. And the point is, we say, how in the world can they rebel 3 days outside of Sinai or 3 days outside the Red Sea? Well, the real question is, how in the world can we rebel when we have all of Scripture? When we can see everything that God has done, not just isolated acts, but the whole revealed will of God, right? And we still lose sight of God's greatness and God's grace. You know, so let's cut them maybe a little bit of slack. And let us, you know, remember that all of this is recorded as an example for us so that we do not act this way. So, Moses, again, back to Moses, right? He's upset. He's so upset, right? He just wants to die. Okay? He's like, God, if this is the way it's going to be, just kill me now. Be done. I can't do this. Okay? Right? He doesn't want to have to face further tribulation. The very ironic thing is God responds to Moses with much grace. He is not rebuked. Okay, Moses is not rebuked, but really, this is just the beginning. Moses has 40 years of this left. And this is what it's going to be. It's going to be rebellion after rebellion after rebellion as God systematically kills off that first generation. Okay, so this is just going to be the start. This is just the beginning of the troubles that Moses is going to face. And at the beginning, Moses is like, kill me now. God's very gracious, but just you wait, Moses. There's more to come. Okay? It is good to see God is very gracious with Moses. So he has an understanding of, you know, the trouble that Moses is going through. Questions? Okay, can someone read for me verse 16 to 23?
Let them take their stand there with you. Then I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the Spirit who is upon you, and will put him upon them, and they shall bear the burden of the people with you, so that you will not bear it all alone. Say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat, for you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, oh, that someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt. Therefore, the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? But Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 on foot, yet you have said, I will give them meat, so that they may eat meat for a whole month. Should flocks and herds be slaughtered for them to be sufficient for them? Or should all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them to be sufficient for them? The Lord said to Moses, is the Lord's power limited? Now you shall see whether my word will come true for you or not.
Okay, so this is God's answer to Moses. So first, he addresses Moses' complaint that the people are too burdensome. It's too much to lead. Moses cannot do it himself. Okay? So God is going to give him 70 elders to share this burden. God is going to put his spirit on these men so they can help lead spiritually. Now, this is different than Exodus 18. Exodus 18, if you remember Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, says, Moses, you are too busy trying to make all the judgments. You need a system under you of judges over certain amounts of people, and then you only get the most important cases. Okay, so that was different. That's for administrative and judicial purposes. These 70 elders, these are for spiritual, helping lead the nation spiritually. Okay? So God says, Moses, you have to go out and get 70 men and bring them to God at the tabernacle. That is where God is going to reveal himself and give them his spirit. Okay? So that's 16 and 17. That's how God's going to answer the burden of leadership. Then verse 18 to 20, this is how God is going to answer the complaint of meat. Okay? So first, the people have to consecrate themselves. That means to purify through bathing and washing of clothes. So that basically they had to be clean. Okay? Exodus 19, verse 10 to 11, they had to do the same thing when God was going to appear to them. Right? God comes and speaks to them the Ten Commandments, if you remember, and the people's response are, God, don't talk to us anymore. Just talk to Moses and let Moses talk to us. Okay? We can't handle it. We can't hear straight from God. It's too scary. Okay? So just speak through Moses. But it was the same thing. They had to consecrate themselves, purify, wash their clothes, bathe. Okay? So, and God says, go consecrate yourselves and you shall eat meat. God's going to give them what they want, but it's not going to turn out well for them. Okay? So he says, you shall eat meat, for you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, oh, that someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt. Okay, so the contrast is between God, the true source of goodness and blessing, and Egypt, right, where the people are saying there was goodness and blessing, they were better off. Okay, so again, we see the people are rejecting God. And that's what it says in verse 20, end of verse 20. Why? Because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? Right? So that is the true sin. Right? It's not necessarily that they asked for meat. It is that they have rejected God and saying, we were better off as slaves of Pharaoh than we are as slaves of you. Okay, so God is going to turn the blessing of meat into a curse, right? He says, you shall eat not 1 day, nor 2, nor 5, nor 10, nor 20, but a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and become loathsome to you. Okay, so they wanted meat so bad, so God's going to give them more than they can handle until they hate the sight of meat. Classic example of be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. Okay, but again, the emphasis really is that they have rejected God. And then good old Moses. He's having a hard day, right? Because verse 21, but Moses said, right? When you start with but, Right after God says something and then you say, but that's not a good, don't do that. Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 on foot. Okay, so these are the soldiers. The fighting age men are about 600,000. So there's approximately 2 to 2.5 million. Okay. Yet you have said, I'm going to give them meat. So now Moses is like, God, don't say that. I don't have enough meat to give all the people. Right? Okay. And he's basically saying, if we killed all the herds that we brought out of Egypt and we caught all the fish in the sea, it's still not going to be enough for them. What do you expect me to do, God? Right? And it's like, Moses, like you said, exactly, Terry. Moses is trying to take on what is not his. Right? God is the one. If God says it, right, God's going to do it. You don't have to take the burden on yourself that you have to do it. God's going to do it. If he wants you to do it, he's going to enable you to do it. Right? So you don't have to stress out about it. But Moses is having a rough day, so he still doesn't believe God can provide. Okay, he thinks there are too many people, that is too big of a job. And he thinks that the people's grumbling and discontent is greater than God's ability to provide. Okay, he just thought that providing meat for that many people for a whole month, right? It's not God saying, hey, I'll give you meat for one meal. Moses probably could have said, okay, I can see that, right? But for a whole month, 30 days, that is too much, he thinks, for God to do. Okay. So the people, Moses also understands too, though, that the people are just really looking for a reason to complain. So he's like, it doesn't matter how much meat you give them. They're still just going to complain. There's not going to be enough to satisfy them. And then God responds, right, to Moses with a rhetorical question. Is Yahweh's power limited? Right? Is the Lord's power limited? Basically, God is saying, Moses, take a seat and just watch, right? The God who parted the Red Sea has not changed. Okay, God would again show Israel how powerful he is. Okay, providing meat for 2.5 million people is nothing, right, for the creator of the world. The creator of the stars, for Pete's sake, right? He made, and that in Genesis 1 is just an afterthought, right? He creates the sun, the moon, oh, and by the way, the stars, right? It's like hardly even mentioned that he creates the stars. Okay, that God is going to provide me. It's going to be no problem. Questions?
Well, it's a really good lesson for us.
Yeah.
Because we think humanly.
Yes.
You know, and Moses was human. And
yep.
Not giving him an excuse, but, you know, we do that all the time. We, how's this going to work? This is not,
yep.
You know, and we don't give God
right.
Credit.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. All right. Can someone read for me verses 24 to 30?
So Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord. Also he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and stationed them around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him, and he took of the Spirit who was upon him and placed him upon the 70 elders. And when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied, but they did not do it again. But two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the name of the other Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those who had been registered, but had not gone out to the tent. And they prophesied in the camp. So a young man ran and told Moses and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the attendant of Moses, from his youth said, Moses, my Lord, restrain them. But Moses said to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them? So Moses returned to the camp, both he and the elders of Israel.
Okay, so despite Moses' doubt and despite Moses' unbelief that God can really do this, right, he still goes out and he obeys. Okay, so we give Moses a hard time, but he is still God's servant, and he still obeys what God tells him. I mean, immediately, right? So Moses went out and tells the people the words of the Lord. You're going to get meat. Go wash yourselves. Wash your clothes. Wash your bodies. OK? Okay. He relays God's message, and then he gathers the 70. So first we're going to deal with the 70, right? The 70 men, and brings them to the tabernacle. Verse 25, then God does what he said he was going to do. He comes down, he speaks to Moses, and he gives them the Spirit. Okay? The evidence that the men have received the Spirit is that they prophesy. Okay? Now, this does not diminish the portion of the Spirit that Moses has. Okay? But it enables the elders to help Moses provide spiritual oversight to the people. When it says that they prophesied, we're not exactly sure what that looked like. Okay, what exactly they did or said. Okay, but whatever it was clearly understood as a sign of the Spirit of the Lord. Okay, now, and it's clear they do not prophesy again, so it's something they only do when they received the Spirit the first time. But that doesn't mean the Spirit leaves them. The Spirit still enables them to make judgments and to help Moses lead. Now, verse 26, we have two guys, Eldad and Medad. Apparently, they're two of the 70, so I guess at the tabernacle there were only 68. Okay, we're not told why they didn't go, so I have no idea. But for whatever reason, Moses said, hey, you're part of the 70, and they don't go to tabernacle. I don't know why. It doesn't tell us, so we don't know why. Okay, but it's clear that they're part of the 70 because even though they didn't go to tabernacle, they still get the portion of the Spirit. Okay, because they start to prophesy. They are also going to be witnesses to Israel that they have received the Spirit, right? Because in tabernacle, who's going to see them prophesy? Only Moses and maybe the priests, right, and themselves. These guys, Eldad and Medad, they're out just in the camps. And they start prophesying, and so word is going to spread quickly that they've received the Spirit. So maybe that's why. I don't know. Okay. There's a young man. It says, verse 27, a young man ran and told Moses, okay, who's still in tabernacle. This maybe was Joshua, but we don't know because it doesn't identify who it is. Okay. So the giving of the Spirit proves that these two men are part of the 70. So again, I don't know why they didn't go to tabernacle, but they didn't. And somebody hears them or hears word of them and then runs and tells Moses. Okay, then we get Joshua in verse 28. Now we've run into Joshua before in Exodus 17. Okay, he was the leader of the fight against the Amalekites. And if you remember, right, this is when Israel is right out of Egypt. They are not warriors, right? They would not have really had weapons, right? And Joshua is tasked with building an army, right? But it doesn't matter because who's going to fight for them? God. So it doesn't even matter that they have no idea what they're doing, that they're not warriors, okay? But that's Joshua, leads the Amalekites. In Exodus 24, it says he's Moses' assistant and he goes up Sinai with Moses. Presumably he doesn't go to the top. He probably waits for Moses somewhere halfway up, but he goes with Moses. And then in Exodus 33, he is the keeper of the tent of the meeting. Remember this? Okay. Exodus 33 is right after Exodus 32. What happens in Exodus 32? No, that's 20. Exodus 32. The golden calf. Okay, so we have the golden calf in Exodus 32. God says, fine, you want another god, I'm out, right? And the tent of meeting is moved outside the camp. Do you remember that? God no longer dwells with Israel because they have rejected him. And the tent, now remember, the tent of meeting, this is before tabernacle. This is before the tabernacle was built. But there was a tent where God would come and meet with Moses. And that is moved outside the camp. Right? Because God has says, you have rejected me as your God, so I will not no longer be with you, among you, right? Outside the camp, and whenever Moses was not meeting with God, Joshua took care of the tent of meeting. Okay, so that's in Exodus 33. So this is who, so Joshua is more than just fought the battle of Jericho, right? Joshua's all the way back with Moses in Exodus, doing really important things. Okay? So here, Joshua sees Eldad and Medad prophesying, and possibly, I mean, because he tells Moses, restrain them, stop them, right? So maybe he sees them as a threat to Moses' leadership, maybe because they didn't come when Moses summoned them, and now they're prophesying as well. Maybe Joshua thinks that's going to be a problem. I don't know. For whatever reason, Joshua wants them stopped. And maybe it's because he sees them as a threat to the leadership. Moses' response to Joshua, though, is very different than the despair he has just expressed to God. Right? Moses says, are you jealous for my sake? So there it makes it sound like, you know, Joshua thinks that this is going to be a problem for Moses' leadership. Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, then that the Lord would put his spirit upon them. So Moses says, no, Joshua, I wish that God would give his spirit to everyone and that everyone would prophesy. And it would not just be 70, but it would be all 2.5 million. Okay. Moses is not at all concerned about his leadership, right? And he understands this is the only way you can be holy and live like God wants you to live is if you have the Spirit of God. This is the solution to Israel's problem of complaining of a rebellious heart. They need the Holy Spirit. They need a regenerated heart. They need a new heart. Okay? You cannot be holy without the Holy Spirit. Okay? Let's go to Joel. Can someone read for me Joel 2, verse 28 and 29? Joel 2, 28
and 29. It will come about after this that I will pour out my spirit on all mankind, and your sons and daughters will prophesy, your old men will dream dreams, your young men will see visions, even on the male and female servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days.
Okay, so this is the day of the Lord. What does God say? There is coming a day when I will pour out my spirit and on everyone. Okay, and in Acts 2, verses 16 to 21, Peter quotes this. He quotes Joel 2, right? Because what had just happened? Pentecost, the coming of the Holy Spirit, right? So Moses is longing for that day when everyone will receive the Holy Spirit and not just a select few. Okay. Right? And had the people of Yahweh been responsive to the Spirit of God rather than to their sinful appetites, the wilderness journey would have looked way different, right? They would have made it to the long promised land and conquered it first time around. That's right. Questions? All right, can someone read for me verse 31 to 35?
Now there went forth a wind from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side, and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. And the people spent all day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. He who gathered least gathered 10 homers. And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. While the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. So the name of that place was called Kibroth Hattaava. Something like that. Because there they buried the people who had been greedy. From Kibroth Hattaava, the people set out for Hazeroth, and they remained at Hazeroth.
Okay, so now we deal with the actual coming of the meat. Okay, so verse 31, there went forth a wind. What we don't see in the English, but what we would have seen in the Hebrew, is that the word for spirit and the word for wind are the same word. It's ruah, R-U-A-H, okay, which, I mean, just know that the word, so the spirit, right, that was just given to these 70 elders, and now we have a wind bringing in the quail. So it's God actively working, and it's the same word. Word for wind and spirit. Okay, so he gives his ruah, his wind or spirit, to the elders at the tabernacle, which is a holy and clean place. And he sends a wind or a spirit to bring quail who fall where? Outside the camp, right? The place of uncleanness and death. Okay? So the spirit is going on these men to lead this people spiritually, and then we have the wind that's bringing in the quail that's going to bring in judgment. Okay? So let's go to Psalm 78, because we actually get more details in Psalm 78 than are given here. Can someone read for me verse 26 to 31? Psalm 78, 26 to 31.
Then he let them fall in the midst of their camp, rounding about their dwellings. So they ate and were well filled on their desire he gave to them. Before they had satisfied their desire, while the food was in their mouths, the anger of God rose against them and killed the son of his daughter's mouth and subdued the choice men of Israel.
Okay, so here it says we have an east wind and a south wind. Okay? Exodus 14:21 says it's an east wind that parts the Red Sea. Okay, so now God uses the same east and south wind to bring in the quail. Now the quail, okay, quail actually do normally migrate across this part of Sinai. Okay, it's part, so God did not bring in a totally foreign animal. Okay, now, still a miracle, right? But quail usually migrate across Sinai from Africa up through Sinai. In the spring, and then they go back in the fall, okay? I don't know if you remember, but in Exodus 16, God had provided quail before. Now, that was just maybe one meal of quail, but Exodus 16, 13, God had given them quail before. Now he's giving them a whole month of quail, okay? So the amount of quail that he provides is measured in three ways, okay? The breadth, depth, and amount, okay? So we have a day's journey. It says about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side. A day's journey was approximately 12 to 15 miles. So this is about 400 square miles of quail. Okay? And Moses didn't know if God could provide. 400 square miles. A day's journey would have been 12 to 15 miles, right? But it's a day's journey all the way around camp. Okay, so it's about probably more than 400 square miles. Then it says 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. Now, there is disagreement on what this means. So, 2 cubits, first of all, is about 3 feet. Okay? So both my commentaries thought that this meant the quail were in piles 3 feet deep. Okay? Abner said that, because quail usually fly really low to the ground, apparently. I don't know these things, but this is what they say. Yes.
Because I've had them in my house.
Okay.
In the backyard.
Yeah.
Right in through the door.
Yeah. So he says that they probably flew only 2 to 3 feet off the ground, which would then make them really easy to catch and kill. You just bonk them on the head. Okay. So regardless, there's enough of them. Okay. So whether they're in piles 3 feet deep or they're that's the height of their flight, they're easy to kill and gather. Then it says they spend, right, all day, all night, all the next day gathering meat, okay? And it says he who gathered least gathered 10 homers. That's 60 to 70 bushels, which is like 500 gallons, okay? And that's the guy who gathered the least. Well, no, they're just gathering them one time. for the month, right? Because then it says, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. So what they would do is they would have salted it and dried it to preserve it, right? They don't have refrigerators. So if you're going to eat meat, yeah, you got to preserve it somehow. So they gathered a ton of it, and then they would have salted it and preserved it. Okay, so some of the meat, right, they would have cooked and eaten right away. But then, right, if you have 60 to 70 bushels of quail, you can't eat all that, so you're going to preserve it. So that's what it means when it says they spread them out for themselves all around camp to dry. Verse 33, while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, it's like you get it in your mouth. The anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague. So even while they are in the midst of eating, God brings judgment. And it says, verse 34, so they named the name of the place, which is called Kibrot Hatava, because there they buried the people who had been greedy. So it sounds like everybody gets a lot of meat, but the judgment was specific against those who had been greedy. And Psalm 78 says they lost, you know, their strongest. Okay, the judgment fits the crime. Okay, they were discontent with what God had provided. They wanted slavery back in Egypt. They wanted meat. So God says, fine, I'll give you meat, but it's going to kill you. Okay, you get what you want, but you're going to die for it.
But not everybody.
No.
The greedy one. Yeah. They were all a little greedy, but the most greedy among
them. Right. And we don't even know that it was 100%, right? I would assume there were some faithful. There's always a remnant, right? So everybody gets the meat, but God is going to single out those that he wanted for judgment because it says those who had been greedy, the people who had been greedy.
So those particular greedy people, right. Most greedy among them,
right.
Were judged with, and where's that?
It says a severe plague, end of verse 33. We don't know. I mean, the commentators speculated. What'd she say?
COVID.
Oh, my goodness. They speculated that it was food poisoning. We don't know. Okay. Well, but it says before it was chewed. So that makes it sound like it hasn't even hit their stomach yet, right? And so I don't know that God. A lot of times commentators try to come up with manna. Is this natural thing that occurs in the desert? Or, you know, it's like. People, God can just do it, you know.
Sometimes there's another place that explains
right.
Something.
Yes.
So that we don't know about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But I would be more inclined to think that just as they were eating it, that God just struck them dead. That would be what I would be inclined to think. But okay, so then again, right, complaining, God's judgment, and then we name the place. Kibrot Hata'ava, right, means graves of craving or graves of greediness. Okay, so this is where people died because they were greedy or, you know, had this strong craving. Remember back at the beginning it says they had greedy desires or craving of cravings, right? Then verse 35, from Kibrot Hata'ava, the people set out for Hazarot, and they remained at Hazarot. Okay, so they move on. It doesn't say how long it takes, and we don't know where these places are either. Okay, we obviously know somewhere between Sinai and Canaan, but we don't know exactly where these places are. So we don't know how long it would have taken them to get there either. But Hazarot is going to be the next scene of rebellion. Yes. Right. But God made sure that they did remember it. They needed to remember. Yeah. Yeah. But yes, no, that is interesting that they name the places where they're judged. And they name it based on their judgment so they can remember how God judges them. Questions? Numbers 11.